One of the things we've been tracking in artworks over the last few years is the rise and rise of Chinese contemporary art. And one of the artists we've heard from and talked about is Ai Weiwei. He's got a huge international reputation, both for his art and also his politics. But he's not at all popular with the authorities at home. Ai Weiwei is outspoken about human rights abuses in China, and he's been subjected to beatings and house arrest. All of which meant there's been great interest in a specially commissioned work of his at the Tate Modern Gallery in London, in the big Turbine Hall there. It opened towards the end of last year and it's still on through until May. But this work has sparked an unexpected controversy. Din Hegney is an Australian arts writer who's right now in Shanghai. Before that, he was in London and he's seen Ai Weiwei's Sunflower Seeds, that's what the commission is called at the Tate, as I did actually a few weeks ago on a quick visit there. Now, Din, I was actually disappointed with Sunflower Seeds, as I think you were too. Describe the work, first of all, to us, will you?
It was originally designed to be an interactive piece that takes up half of the Turbine Hall floor. So for those who have been there, you'll know that it's a vast industrial space which has been converted into a contemporary art gallery, or museum, I should say. And this commission was one of the Unilever commissions, which has featured major players like Carsten Holler and Tacita Dean and Anish Kapoor, and other major artists. So these are annual commissions. And it's a really big deal. It's one of the major pieces that the Tate put on every year. And the commissions usually remain open to the public for about 6 months. So this piece, Sunflower Seeds, has been in planning and production for more than 2 years. Ai Weiwei went and commissioned an entire city in the Jiangxi province of southern China, in a place called Jingdezhen, and has a population of about 1.5 million people. But he basically got 1,600 workers from a specialist porcelain factory to begin making, by hand, life-size sunflower seeds. More than 100 million of them, in fact. So greater than, I think it was, originally there was a comment that he made that it was two for every man, woman and child in Britain. These were then shipped after being produced over a two-year period, laboriously by hand, and hand-painted as well. They were then shipped to China and then poured into the Turbine Hall as something that was meant to be a sort of what other art critics are calling a minimalist to maximalist installation. But the idea was that the public could then walk into the work, on top of the work, and hear their footsteps crunch the seeds underfoot. They could pick them up and let them run through their hands. And, you know, security was even concerned that people were going to steal them. But Ai Weiwei said, well, I would if I went. So,
and that was okay. But what has happened is that it turned out that when lots of people walk on this kind of field of sunflower seeds, it throws up lots of dust, ceramic dust, and that's considered a public health risk.
It's considered a hazard if it's breathed in over an extended period. Tate Modern didn't really explain what an extended period was, and the general feeling from the people I spoke to about it was not so much the public concerns, although they were legitimate, but it was more so that the dust would work its way through the entire ventilation system of Tate Modern. And so for staff and security and longer visitors there, it became something that was going to potentially affect the entire institution.
The upshot being that you can no longer walk on it. The floor has been roped off and you have to look at it from a distance.
You have to now look at it from a distance. And in fact, you're not even allowed to touch the porcelain seeds anymore, which I think has been a great disappointment to Tate Modern and to the curators involved. But especially, I think, to Ai Weiwei and the workers. One of his recent tweets on Twitter had said the workers in Jingdezhen are asking, when can we start work on a new version of the piece? And because they want to remake it so it doesn't create dust when it's walked on.
Well, Din, why and how does not being able to walk on and pick up and touch these millions of sunflower seeds change the work, do you reckon?
I guess on a fundamental level, it changes the physical experience and the sensory experience of being able to interact in a very personal, tactile way with the sculptures. I think now when you go and see it, as you would have seen too, Amanda, you sort of just look at this big expanse of grey sort of nothing because you're standing so far away.
Visually, it's actually fairly boring. You know, from where you have to view it now, it really just looks like a floor of sort of grey gravel.
Mm. And so as a result, you really have no appreciation of the delicate nature of the sculptures or even these millions of seeds are handcrafted sculptures of sunflower seeds. The other thing, I guess, beyond the direct tactile experience being removed for the public and for visitors, it's also the space that you would normally go into a gallery or a museum, and that space that you enter as an audience member to be able to appreciate the work, to be able to consider the ideas. And I think the deep sort of philosophical nature of Ai Weiwei's work is really lost. To me, it's a great shame and a very interesting example of institutional failure or public institutional failure for not being able to identify all of the potential risks, especially when you have an artist such as Ai Weiwei who is famous or infamous for taking great risks both internationally and within China.
Yeah, you're grumpy with the gallery, Din, with Tate Modern for doing this, for roping it off. But surely it's the artist who's at fault. I mean, this is a public commission. Shouldn't he have tested his artwork first, you know, tested what happens when people do walk on all these seeds?
Yes. Having been in China myself now for a little while, I guess things like dust and pollution and things that I guess in Western countries we would find unacceptable, here in China are very much a part of everyday life, and there's not much you can do about it. So what we might perceive as dangerous levels of potentially hazardous dust, they would just perceive as a little bit of byproduct that, you know, you should just ignore and get on with it.
Well, as you mentioned, this installation, these sunflower seeds, this work has lots of kind of ideas of the artist in it. The sunflower seeds have all sorts of resonances, as I understand. You know, they're made of porcelain, China, so it's a bit like, if you could appreciate the work as it was intended, it would be a bit like walking on China. It also plays with the idea of made in China and handcrafted things and mass production. Also, I think sunflower seeds were a food source during the famines under Mao, yeah? So there's another kind of resonance there.
Mm-hmm, for a long time. And also there were some famous political posters, a major campaign that Mao had run where he was represented as the sun. His face was placed inside the sun, and there were sort of millions of Chinese people around him who were represented as sunflowers who would all turn to face him. The idea that as the leader of the People's Party, he would bring sustenance and life force to them should they follow him.
Has all that been lost now, all those resonances?
I think for those people who do know a little about Chinese history, modern history, it's not. But for most other people, I would say, especially in a British context, definitely those resonances are lost.
What do you think should have been done? What should the gallery have done rather than roping it off, closing it off?
Generally, by discussing it with the artist properly during the production period, you could avert most problems in the final presentation. What surprises me in this instance is that no one in the process picked up that there could be dust. And the other thing that I find interesting is in all the photos that were taken in the 3 days before the exhibition was closed off. I know dust is difficult to see and photograph, but you know, there are people rolling on it, there are babies crawling all over it, there are old people sitting down on it, and you think, well, no one here seems to be having a problem, so is there a larger issue at work here?
Oh, so you suspect something else is going on?
Not from the Tate Modern's point of view. I think it's probably coincidental, but it was only a few weeks after the partial closure of sunflower seeds at Tate Modern that Ai Weiwei had decided to throw a very expensive party to launch his new Shanghai studio. With the approval of the authorities, and I think Shanghai authority were very excited about Ai Weiwei, who's based in Beijing, coming down to set up a studio practice and education practice here in Shanghai. But a couple of weeks after, and just before he was to have this huge launch party to which all the glitterati of Shanghai had been invited, he was placed under house arrest, unofficial house arrest. So he couldn't leave his compound in Beijing for a week.
And the studio in Shanghai was demolished.
Yeah, then the authorities ordered that it be demolished because it hadn't followed the proper safety procedures and filled in the right application forms for gaining planning approval. So, you know, you kind of think all of this is happening within a three-week period to him, not without sounding conspiratorial or, you know, suspicious of anyone. You do have to wonder sometimes what's going on when artists come under such fierce attack by bureaucracy and institutional.
Well, it's at least interesting timing, one has to say. And even though you can't walk on Ai Weiwei's sunflower seeds anymore, it has continued to attract a lot of interest and attention, maybe because, not in spite of, this controversy. And also I noticed that last month 100,000 of these porcelain seeds, not the ones at the Tate, this lot was privately owned, sold at auction at Sotheby's in London for $550,000. That's, as I understand it, more than four times what they were expecting to get, and it works out at about $5.60 per sunflower seeds. And millions more of Ai Weiwei's tiny porcelain sunflower seeds are still on the floor of the Turbine Hall at Tate Modern in London until May. Din Hegney is an arts writer. He writes for The Art Life, the Australian blog about contemporary art that's always worth reading. Din's in Shanghai at the moment via London. And thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Amanda.
And on ABC Radio National, you're listening to Artworks, Amanda Smith with you. Well, contemporary art can throw up all sorts of challenges, not only to do with public health and safety, but also to do with conservation, especially with artworks that are made from what you might call non-traditional materials. A famous example of this is the work by Damien Hirst that's called The Physical Impossibility of Death in the Mind of Someone Living. It's the shark in the tank of formaldehyde. He created it in 1991, but a few years ago, the shark started to decompose. Damien Hirst was okay for it to be substituted with a new dead shark, but is it the same work of art? And what would have happened if the artist didn't want the work altered or fixed up in any way, or if the artist was dead and their intentions unknown? All this matters when an artwork is valuable, culturally valuable, as well as maybe worth a lot of money. Vanessa Kowalski is an art conservator with a particular interest in the conservation of contemporary art. She's based at the Centre for Cultural Materials Conservation in Melbourne. She's also spent time in New York, based at the Guggenheim Museum and at the Museum of Modern Art. Now, Vanessa, compared to traditional painting and sculpture, how much more of an issue has conserving contemporary artwork become when they might be made from found objects or dead animals or goodness knows what?
It certainly places conservators into a new territory, really. Conservators tend to be trained in traditional materials and techniques, so when it comes to working with something that is perhaps made with new materials, human remains, animal remains, conservators need to think outside the box.
Okay, so give us an example of an interesting, tricky piece of conservation you've been involved with.
Well, when I was at the Guggenheim Museum, there was a large project of a Chinese New York-based artist, Cai Guosheng, who had a large installation piece that consisted of sheep skins or sheep's bladders. And the main problem was that the sheep's bladders had become deflated and were no longer existing in the sort of formation that the artist had originally intended them to exist in or created. So part of the problem was to recreate the shape of these sheep skins. but also maintaining the sort of translucency of these skins that was important to the artist. I suppose in this example, one of the things that was valuable was the artist was still alive and still active. And so it became a collaboration between the conservators, the artist and the curators.
What about, though, when the artist is no longer alive, but you've got an artwork that's starting to degrade? You know, an artist like Eva Hesse, for example, you know, she was really a pioneer in the materials she used, wasn't she? In New York in the 1960s, she was using latex and plastics and all sorts of things. And that was part of her refiguring of artistic convention, I suppose. She died in 1970. What do you do there with an artwork of hers?
Well, that was another problem that we had to tackle at the Guggenheim. There was a large piece of hers. I think it's the largest from her body of work, so it's quite important, and one of the last works she created called Extended Expansion, made from fiberglass and latex.
Sort of like a curtain, isn't it? The latex fabric is sort of hung from and on the fiberglass poles, yeah?
That's right. So the fiberglass poles lean up against the wall, so it's not really freestanding, and the latex curtain drapes down in between the fiberglass poles. What has happened is that the latex has started to degrade, has become very brittle, it has become discoloured, and it's starting to shear away. Because the artist is no longer alive, but there is an estate that cares for and has some say about the preservation and ongoing exhibition and presentation of her artworks, it became a discussion between the curators at the Guggenheim and the conservators as to what should be done with this piece. It's a very important piece, and can it be displayed in its current state? Can it be conserved? The curators and the estate both feel that it can't really be displayed in its current state, and the conservators feel that it can only be treated to a certain level. So really it can be stabilised, but it can't be brought back to its original formation.
So that remains a kind of dynamic dialogue between all three parties, really, as to what the future of this artwork is.
Yeah, that's right. And it's an interesting example because the assistant that helped Eva Hesse create the piece is still alive. And so he has an understanding of what materials were used, how they were prepared, and how they were put together to create the work. But the estate feels that because the artist is no longer alive, the work can't be recreated. Even if it was, in some cases, works are recreated or remodeled, reworked, and they can be redated. And that's sort of
So you give the original date and then you put reworked such and such a date or something
right.
like that.
That's right. And that's something that's thought about and discussed with the artist, the estate, the owner.
Mm. What about when an artist's intention is actually for their work to disintegrate over time, when that's, you know, part of the art of it? Say like an artist like Joseph Beuys, the German sculptor, installation artist. I mean, part of his philosophy was that a sculpture of his was a kind of process that might decay or dry out or ferment or whatever, depending on what it was made from. But you know, an art gallery or a private collector who buys an artwork isn't going to want it to degrade or is going to want to keep it intact. So who wins here? You know, when the gallery wants to keep it intact, the artist's intention is for it to degrade over time. What does the conservator do?
Well, I suppose with somebody, especially, for example, you've used Joseph Beuys, the collector, whether that be a public or private collector, has some understanding and awareness that this is what this artist's work is about and that that is important to the essence of the work. But part of the conservator's role is to maintain or give some longevity to the work. But if intervention is not desired or is not important in maintaining the artist's intent, then that's something that conservators should respect.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because, you know, what the job of an art conservator is actually quite complex, I'm just coming to understand, in that your job is to keep, first of all, keep the object in the condition it was when it was created or to restore it to that condition if it has degraded. And that's for the benefit of future generations, I suppose. But what you also have to preserve is the artist's intention, which may or may not be explicit, in fact. So just tease out for us those dilemmas.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose these dilemmas aren't necessarily new dilemmas, because these sorts of issues have existed with ethnographic objects, so objects that have sacred or spiritual meaning, and sometimes these do involve human remains. So this is something that conservators have thought about for some time, and now with artists using more experimental or non-traditional materials, there's new discussions coming out, especially with technology. So technology is becoming a large part of artworks these days, and so there's an ongoing discussion about how we preserve and continue to present and exhibit works that are made from digital technologies.
Or especially when the technologies keep changing and the platforms for viewing those works keep changing, yeah?
That's right. That really is a new area in conservation, and many large institutions are starting to build up departments that just focus on these time-based media installations. And that, again, is about communicating with the artist and talking about their vision for the artwork and how they want it to be displayed in the future, and what happens if these components become obsolete, or can we upgrade the software? Can we change from analog to digital? These are sort of new areas for the conservator.
So, Vanessa, what are the principles or guidelines then that you operate on? I mean, you know, this is an issue that's facing, as you say, art museums and collectors the world over. What's the general thinking, or is it always case specific?
I think it is really case specific. You have to be very flexible. Conservators are guided by a code of ethics. So in Australia, there's a conservation organisation, a professional group that does have a code of ethics, and we sort of work within those guidelines. But when there are these cases that are a little bit outside the traditional realm of conservation, that's when it becomes about, yeah, this dialogue and collaboration.
Well, it's a fascinating area, and you scratch the surface and it becomes more and more complicated. Vanessa Kowalski is an art conservator. She's based at the Centre for Cultural Materials Conservation in Melbourne. And Vanessa, I'll let you go and worry about what to do with some other kooky artwork. Thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.